Cool.
Okay.
Is anybody online? No, I think for now not. So.
Everybody decided to come in person. So like so, often we have a mix of this crowd online, but here they all are here in
Nice.
the room.
I know Hadass is still here, so
Yeah,
should I
we
get her?
should we maybe we wait for a couple minutes for Hadass.
Yeah.
Did anybody know where Hadass went?
She was in the
Okay. Oh, Andy's gonna go look for her.
Where was she in a meeting? Yeah.
Oh, maybe she's in a meeting.
I mean, we can also
Oh,
talk.
there she is.
There
Okay, here she
you
comes. All right. And do we have any visitors here who want to introduce themselves? Anybody who's here that hasn't been in the group before yet? So go ahead. Nice. So you're first year PhD student? Or first year master student? Or first year undergrad? There's so many first year. Are you first year elementary school? First year faculty? Like, I can't tell. Right. So it's very ambiguous. So welcome. Welcome. You're always welcome. Anybody else visiting?
Yeah, I know.
I know what you. Okay. Not at Boston University. See, it's very ambiguous. Like people are from all sorts of institutions here. Okay, that's great. Welcome. Welcome. Anybody else want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I introduced myself a bit last time, but yeah, so I'm a CBI fellow, Cambridge Boston Alumni Initiative, Bain's like research fellowship thing. So I'm here for a bit during the spring. And
Welcome. Remind me what your home institution is. Where are you visiting from?
Texas A&M.
Oh, Texas.
Yeah, I'm a first year
Great.
PhD student.
Okay. Nice. Nice. Great. Yeah, it was an interesting group, right?
We have one more.
There's another folk I can see. Yes.
I'm currently RN at BU. I also did an undergraduate as well.
Wonderful.
Recently graduated.
Welcome.
Thank
So,
you.
in between undergrad and other things.
Yeah.
That's great. Okay.
Wait,
So,
can I plug the hackathon?
oh, there's a hackathon to plug. Yes, more
Yeah.
announcements. Okay.
We have a hackathon today and tomorrow, starting at 2:30 today. For all the projects that you've always wanted to do, but did just, I don't know, haven't had the time to do. Now that you have a research assistant, like who can write all your code for you, you can finally do those projects.
Research assistant. Who's the research assistant?
Claude.
Andy?
Oh.
So yeah, we're just gonna
Oh,
have
I see.
fun. We're just
You mean
gonna have
Opus
fun.
that has Sonnet working for it, that has Haiku working for it.
Yeah,
that's
that's
right.
right.
I
Exactly.
see.
Yeah. Well,
It's very hierarchical.
It's like an ML.
Oh, I
Yeah.
see. I see. Even better.
We have a lab account for how do you do that?
I expense. I ask people to expense it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, which we're
Yeah.
starting to process
But we
that.
have a lab account right now at Mila, for example, like with Siva.
Oh,
But
nice.
it's tricky because I don't know, it's like it gets in a situation where like you ask your lab mate to do less so the time limit doesn't run out. You're like almost competing for the.
All because there's a quota for the whole lab.
Yeah, so now we upgraded. I think now it's fine. But sometimes I sit next to my room and I'm like, hey, you've been doing a lot. I think in an hour we run out of tokens.
Yeah. Hey, hold off.
It's
I got something important to do. You're just goofing around.
with GPUs now the same.
David, you need to get on this lab on.
Okay, we'll figure this
We
out.
have to figure this.
No, I'm expensing it. So we'll
Yeah.
like every people are doing it.
Oh,
It's,
the expense.
yeah, you can expense it.
Oh,
So if yeah,
okay.
you expense it.
Like the $200 a month.
If you use it, so I'm expecting people to be appropriate in what they're doing. So what I told the
Honorary.
what I told the NDIF people
Yes.
is that for engineers who are trying to write hundreds of unit tests all the time or whatever, then yeah, absolutely, a couple hundred dollars a month, totally worth it. If you're just kind of goofing around with it to see if there's like an interesting research thing to do, but you're not using it all the time, then usually you don't exhaust the $20 a month one. But if you find that you're exhausting it, then yeah, absolutely. Upgrade yourself. Expense it. Make sense?
For those new people, how do you use this? I
Okay.
can
Okay.
send your message.
Okay.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. All right. Welcome, everybody.
Yeah.
2026 is such an interesting year, isn't it?
I hope it's not going to be interesting.
It already is interesting.
No new papers.
Interesting years.
It's enough interesting, isn't it? Not too interesting. Okay. So I want to introduce our speaker. So we're very lucky to have here with us today, Benno Courier,
Koya.
Benno Courier, who is wrapping up his PhD at Mila, and he's sort of on the faculty and postdoc circuit, and so he's been working on interpretability at the boundary between language and perception, language and vision, and so we're really lucky to have him share with us his research and his perspective, get a little view of what a job talk looks like for people who might be putting together a job talk in your future. And so welcome, Benno.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm glad there's such a large audience with two rows. Exactly. So yeah, today I'll be presenting, kind of summarizing my PhD and then focusing on the most recent project that is most like very interpretability focused, which is great for this lab. As David mentioned, I'm in fifth year right now at Mila and McGill with Siva Reddy. Yeah, and feel free to interrupt with questions. Like, I'm happy to keep it interactive. So yeah, I'll be talking about unifying and interpreting vision and language representations. And the talk structure will roughly be like just motivating why I think multimodality is important, interesting, and not solved yet. Then I'll present sort of three themes of my research, like stress testing models around this theme of unification, multimodality, unifying generation understanding. And then at the end, the biggest chunk of the talk on multimodal interpretability. And then I'll kind of close off with a roadmap where like I want to work on and what I hope the field will go at, the vision language or multimodal field. So why study vision language, or like why care about it, or like I personally also. So fundamentally, perception and language are complementary and very important for understanding the world. So whether you're an AI system or a human, from perception, like as in, for example, as a baby, you learn about objects in the beginning, and then after 1 or 2 years, you learn like the temporal dimension, more dynamics and tracking, and at some point, something more abstract, also maybe intuitive physics, cause and effect, affordances, and so on. And this abstract part also brings us then to the other side. Language abstracts away most of those details. Now we have more like symbolic representations and like just dog plays with ball. Your knowledge is maybe more represented as a graph. And the field of pragmatics and linguistics would also remind us that language is rarely used in isolation. Its meaning usually comes from the perception that it talks about and the physical context and the shared goals. So only together they kind of make sense. And there's a lot of commonalities between the two because they both come from the same world, both have some notion of compositionality. Some people argue they have a shared conceptual or representation structure, maybe under this umbrella term of Platonic representation hypothesis, and so on. So they synergize, hopefully. But at the same time, it's also non-trivial to combine the two, right? Perception is a continuous modality, at least most of the time. So there's no like sort of well-defined atomic units, like a pixel is not a grid unit. On the language side, you have more discrete units that are usually well defined, like either set words or sentences and so on. On the perception side, some people say there are maybe spatial reasoners or visualizing or we have dreaming, but more canonically, we think of language as sort of the medium of thought and reasoning. But this is often a debate, so also this contrast. And sort of as a result, the real world tasks that we care about in AI or in the world also reflect this inherent multimodality. So if you have an embodied agent, it not only needs to perceive the world and act, but also integrate instructions from humans and all the knowledge from the internet it can access to solve the task more efficiently. And likewise, a digital agent not only interacts with symbols and web pages symbolically, but there's often spatial arrangement, images, and even videos, maybe a tutorial you want to learn about how to like navigate something. So even there, you have to integrate these modalities very like deeply. But beyond the demos we see these days, because you might think like now modalities like multimodality solve, we see like the image editing is getting really strong and video generation and so on. I would say there's still a lot of like failure modes and maybe one that is familiar to people in Claude Code that I briefly want to mention that where I felt like, again, multimodality is still fundamentally unsolved. Like I want to visualize the results in a plot for the paper. Claude goes reasoning for 5 minutes and then comes back. And it's just a very bad plot. And then I ask it to verify and go again. And it gives me a very different bad plot, kind of very confident. And this was just a plot where it just put the error here. Like I wanted these things not to be like super like spaced out and so on. And you just feel like it can't de reason as deeply as it can with text about like going back and forth. Like sure, it's good at one shot, but when you want the same kind of chain of thought reasoning that you get from text, it doesn't work as well. And I think that's kind of like there's a like an underlying reason for that. So to address some of these challenges and get to multimodal models that can reason as good as Claude Code and Text. MyNorth does kind of unified multimodal models. That's what I want to work towards. And what I mean by that is that on the one hand, we should train more, like maybe from scratch, that's an open question, but at least train more from the beginning, multimodality, and not sort of post hoc stitch them together. At least most...
Like, I feel like Claude is definitely like trained, like loop retraining.
So yeah, I think Gemini and OpenAI and Google have said that these models are more native. But at least the open source one, Chameleon, like when you train fully from scratch, like it's pretty bad. I'll mention it later. So what works best is that you at least start, for example, from LLM weights and then do that. But yeah, you want to share maybe most of the weights. And also, like as a result of that, you hopefully have a shared space to reason and not sort of like a pixel space and then a separate sort of text space that you have to kind of go back and forth. And arguably, like as humans, we have a lot of these elements, maybe not exactly like this also as well. Like a very tight integration. So now I'll kind of mention like sort of three pillars or steps towards this North Star that I've worked on. On the left side, stress testing, are these models actually integrating modalities robustly or are they taking shortcuts? Then unifying paradigms, specifically what's been a big challenge is unifying like visual understanding and generation in one model. And then recently also understanding what is happening internally. Are these representations actually unified? How do they interact? Because you can define your architecture and objective to be unified, but the model might still learn to separate things and do things differently. So for each one, I'm going to mention one work and then kind of skip the other ones. So on the left side, I'm going to focus on image code briefly, where we stress test VLMs with complex multi-image reasoning. And I'm going to skip over work where more recently we worked on intuitive physics understanding and curating minimal pairs of videos. So in image code, this was a big bit, it's a bit of a older work. It's from 2021. The motivation at the time was Clipk had come out, Vision Birds, and people were wondering, are these models actually that great? Or are they just taking shortcuts? And the problem was a lot of the benchmarks were too easy at the time. You could have simple baselines like bag of words and so on that could get you far. So our goal was to create a hard open-ended task with minimal visual pairs, which is much harder than minimal textual pairs to curate. And the format we thought of was retrieval image text matching such that it's easy to evaluate. So the question was really, how do you at large scale curate very interesting minimal visual pairs to stress test these models? So what we did was we crowdsourced this. And the step one was getting very highly minimal visual pairs with some heuristics. It often came from video frames. And then we kind of took a pragmatics approach. So one crowd worker would describe one of the frames out of 10 frames pragmatically, meaning they would consider a discriminative listener on the other end. And they are like, I'll actually like keep this for a second. So in this case, frame 3. And you can already think it's quite hard. Like I'm already giving some clues with the red bounding box. But like distinguishing this from 9 other distractors, you can maybe think what you would say. It's quite hard. So what the person said, it was very efficient and to the point. No brights made visible at all. So it's a very contextual description. And you have to do a lot of reasoning because this shoulder is only like a shoulder of a bride, but if you look there, maybe you have to check the blue dress is like, means they are bridesmaid. In isolation, you wouldn't even realize a blue dress is a bridesmaid. So a lot of reasoning going on in the background. And then we only keep an example if several other crowd workers receive this successfully. So what we get at the end is this like sort of very hard task with 10 image retrievals, sort of we frame it as that. 21,000 captions in the end, we collected around 100,000 images. And on average, these captions are actually much longer than the one I showed here, because you often have to like mention many details to distinguish it not only from one of the distractors, but all 9. How do you the underlying images? So we were initially thinking of just like taking like normal static images and finding like clip nearest neighbors, but they were still not that similar. So then instead we just took like 3 different video data sets and did like sort of very like short sort of clip distance between the frames. Like first we would cut it into scenes and then like distance. And then the idea was that like sometimes they would be too similar, but then our procedure with several other crowd workers would just discard it. So sometimes they would be indistinguishable almost.
I mean like this particular example where the bridesmaid is not in the scene.
Yeah.
You had to come up with it right now. Let's come up with a task where the bridesmaid is not in the scene.
That's crowd worker number 1's job, right?
Yeah. So crowd, like this is emergent, sort of out of the task. So this is a two player guessing game, where like they could have said anything. They could have said like, in frame 3, like the background is slightly like brighter. It's basically like whatever, like it's a very like goal-directed description.
Would they also like say this like set of images is not interesting? Let's move to the next one.
We didn't. Interestingness was not part of it. No,
I see.
it could have
So
been.
the thing in the filtering was actually in the second.
By the retrieval, we did tell them not to focus on text because often that was a bit too boring. If like with videos, you often have like just at the bottom like captioning from some YouTube video, and not to mention other images explicitly. Like we wanted to keep like not say like it's more than image one or less than image one.
Interesting.
And it was very interesting because the players got better and better over time. So they were both describer and retriever, and like at some point they got very efficient at the task and very sort of.
But because of the nature of your original source, you probably have a lot of things. It's kind of it's about temporal things that have changed because you've got it all on video. A lot of things that happened before and after, et cetera.
Exactly. So there's a lot of implicit like temporal reasoning, spatial reasoning going on, you know? So yeah, the two key ideas are is, like we wanted to avoid shortcuts, specifically text ones. Like by definition, you can't take shortcuts here. And we focus on visual minimal pairs. And I would argue, like from what I've seen, this is probably the most minimal differences you will find in data sets, as at least I've seen with these minimal pairs. Often they're much bigger that you like put something on the left instead of the right. Because we have this definition of minimal pair that anything that you can barely still put into language at the boundary, sort of like by this sort of the procedure. The other key idea was like just a proxy for real world challenges because a lot of emergent phenomena from this guessing game, visual search, multi-image reasoning, temporal pragmatics, and so on. So I would argue basically that with all these sort of phenomena that you can solve here, you need maybe like a multimodal, like unified chain of thought to solve this, going back and forth, maybe flexible across model representations, not just sort of one static vector for each image, like it should be adapted to the task. So that's how it ties back to this goal. And but at the time, the modality connection was very, very shallow. CLIP was just one dot product between them, so like it got slightly above random, like maybe 15%, 20%, depending on which subset. With fine-tuning, we got it to 25, 30%. And even to this day, like when I tested ChatGPT like a few months ago, it gets 56% on like a smaller set because I didn't want to feed 10 images.
This is on the retrieval task.
Yeah, this is the retrieval task. So we framed it as retrieval because we wanted to automate it. But that brings, like I will briefly mention also the captioning side of it. So the takeaway I would say is here that image code still remains a challenge, which is not taken for granted in an age where usually benchmarks after 1 or 2 years get solved. That's a great example of a task that maybe only or like mostly unified models would solve better or efficiently at least.
When you do the evaluation, you give it all 10 frames at once.
So like either the simplest thing is like at the time with CLIP, you just give them sort of separately. And that makes it very hard because the descriptions are very contextual. Like it's kind of obvious that CLIP wouldn't solve it well. But we trained also models where like we take the CLIP vector and then feed it into like a small shallow transformer that kind of can attend to all 10 images. Nowadays models can even take 10 images in one go.
Just to clarify, the curve is the text problem. And you're trying to find like the correct images.
Exactly. It's like you can also frame it as like frame search or like something like that. So after the release, the training split was used in some popular models like Llama 1 Vision or Mantis and so on. And other people started working more on the captioning side. So we had one paper here with Daniel Fried and Jifu Wu. And I think 2025, someone else like kind of set the captioning state of the art. But there it's a bit harder to, like it's a bit more open-ended or harder to evaluate what's a good caption.
Model still benefits.
I would guess so. My guess would be maybe now that's 60, 65%, or like maybe 56. It's hard to say, but like a few months ago, at least the
So, we're always bad.
yeah, like a half a year ago, I mean, this was the model that was seemed like the
As
best.
compared to today's standards.
Yeah. What would you recommend?
Oh, I don't know. Like, I mean, I'm very impressed by Opus 4.6 now.
I think Opus is really good at visual.
I mean, I
But I
didn't test
don't
visual stuff.
frame.
I actually didn't test visual at all.
Okay.
But like,
No, yeah, it's definitely better than GPT stuff on visual.
Yeah, you can also do a lot of tool calling here, like zooming in, cropping and stuff. Yeah.
I would have guessed Gemini because they have so much video, right?
Right.
No. Maybe I'll run a. Now with Cloud Code, it's very easy to evaluate this again.
Right.
Like, revisit all benchmarks, see how good they
Oh,
are.
sorry, it searched.
Let's go home.
Maybe.
No.
But I don't think it would be solved. Like,
No.
I would say like the, it's not above
But
70% right now.
There's also smoke and Chinese models with BL modality that are
Quickest.
approaching.
Yeah.
No.
Always good to have benchmarks that are not saturated yet.
Wait, I have a question. So, like, is the like, so what is the idea here? Like, that the model can only do this task if, like, it can understand like the language task and then translate it to image. Like, is that the idea?
Which hypothesis, yeah, this is chasing.
So the do you mean my vision, like my
Yeah.
vision for what kind of model could solve this well?
Yeah, sure.
Like it's, I guess it's kind of like I'll get you sort of my vision, but like it would be a model that like inherently very flexible, can reason between text and image tokens. It can just be like, let me look at that visual token again, let me like copy it here, look at it in sort of in one sort of long chain of thought, instead of having to either crop it or, and like also maybe like as a human, if you tell me something, I can also very flexibly adapt my representation. Like I'm not encoding like right now my whole frame. You, like if you ask me like what's going on outside, I will like ignore what else is here and just focus on that. So like also going back into the vision trans like vision encoder and like adapting that more flexibly. Yeah.
What like margin of error is like okay, so like I bake cookies, right? And like I'll write down like a recipe for my friends. And then they'll send me photos of the cookies. And like they're all very different. But like they're pretty smart people. So like they understand like visual reasoning. They understand like text. I guess I'm trying to understand because like these are like humans who are pretty good at both. But like you can give them like a text artifact, like a recipe, and they'll produce like 10 very different things. So I guess I'm still trying to understand.
Understand the difficulty of the task, or like what kind of model would like understand what part?
Yeah, I guess the second one.
What
Like,
kind of
what is it?
model?
Like, you have some sort of uncertainty, right? If you only look at the text, you can have multiple set of
Oh,
images
you mean like
generated.
because the this description could be correct for like there's sort of ambiguity? Is that
Yeah,
yeah?
I guess maybe cases like that.
Yeah, so there are.
Or you're saying, is it the way you're saying it's like, well, a bridesmaid could have a very different appearance in different contexts. Is that what you're talking
Yeah,
about?
Yeah.
yes. Like
So we have situations where, like, semantically speaking, it would be true for two frames. Even it's like, I don't know, the man is the tallest, or like the man is high up, and like it's true for a lot of the frames that they're high up. But the high, like, if you think about it, sort of from a speaker listener perspective, you know, if they wanted me to distinguish this, they would have said something else. So they must like this sort of this pragmatics aspect, where we have semantically, like, for three it would be true, but like pragmatically, like, yeah, I don't know if that makes sense.
No, thanks for the clarification.
Any sorts of like, because you said that you base your filtering on like the amount of people, other annotators that get it right, basically. But have you thought of like using it as some sort of source of uncertainty to kind of weight, you know, like in the, I can imagine that the case where the shoulder is the only thing visible of the bridesmaid, many people could chose that, like, and then that could be a good alternative, kind of, you know, like higher uncertainty at
Right,
least.
like a like almost correct
Yes,
solution.
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I
Like,
haven't modeled that, yeah.
yes, they're so hard.
Yeah,
Exactly.
yeah.
It's just a dog. I'm like 40,
But
maybe.
yeah, in sort of in pragmatics, people model it this way. So if the probability of the listener is like, what's the probability that the speaker would have said this if they had a listener in mind? So like there is this modeling. I never looked into this in detail, but
I
that's
think
this
you
rational
usually
speech
populate
act.
this kind of data set.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, so that was that. Yeah, now that we know like models are maybe not there fully yet, like how can we from a modeling side get to more unified models that can maybe do this better? Specifically what I mentioned, like visual understanding and generation in one model that was at least a challenge at the time. So here I'm going to present one work at the top, Diffusion ITM from 2023, where we showed that Stable Diffusion can also do image text matching. And I'm going to mostly ignore the ones at the bottom that are both about image editing, which I think is also a great test bed for those two, because you first need to understand the image more on an abstract level and then generate the low level perceptual change. Yeah. So here the motivation at the time was this famous avocado chair example that maybe some of you remember, where people were like, wow, like have models solve compositionality, they can compose these concepts. Maybe generative objectives are better for compositional representations than shortcuts you might learn from discriminative objectives. So that was the question. But then what we wondered was, how can you objectively test if these image generators are good on compositionality benchmarks? Because these are usually framed as a discriminative task. Like if you want to know if Clip is good at that, you would say like, is this image matching the text or not? So that was the research question. So what we show is that Stable Diffusion is more than a sort of a generator in this paper. And when I, as I mentioned, when I said we want to measure understanding on compositionality, that is a proxy for that is usually scoring image text pairs. So then our research question specifically becomes, how can we repurpose Stable Diffusion to assign a score to an image instead of generating one? So if you have here now this image like a fire truck, or sorry, a truck fire, you want to assign some similarity score to it. And basically our like key insight is that you can interpret the denoising error as a semantic similarity score. So in this case, if like the model is usually trained to denoise this image or like to remove the noise, and we would say it's a low denoising error if it fits the text because the model doesn't have to do much work. It's like it fits. I don't have to maybe edit it and so on. But so this example is from Winnowground, which is like a famous compositionality benchmark. If you then flip the text and it now says a fire truck, if the model is compositional, it should understand like that's a different meaning of these words together. I should give a higher denoising error. Maybe I have to edit the image now and sort of change, not just denoise. There's like a lot of technical details I'm leaving out here, like how to exactly deal with the noise. And we also did some fine tuning just to get the key idea across. And maybe other people also remember here diffusion classifier, which was a very similar work that focused more on the sort of the vision and classification side and less on the compositionality side, came out at the same time. And now that the nice thing is we can now, yeah.
Why do you fit in like the image at such a high noise level?
And that was just an example. Like I just put some noise over. So like what we, in practice, what we do, you have to sample like the best, you get the best performance if you sample at many noise levels and then take the average sort of score across that. So that's the details I'm not showing here. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
And does it matter early or late? I'm just curious.
I think in our case, it was best if you more or less do it uniformly. I think the diffusion classifier did some more ablations on this. Yeah.
Yeah. So just to clarify, what's the difference? The diffusion classifier is using a single class.
Yeah.
As a text prompt. And now here you're like sort of like having like two concepts together. And...
it's the same idea. Like whether it's a class, you can represent the class as a text and you'd have to like iterate over all your classes and scored. In our case, we would just iterate over two, and Winnowground is just two texts. With image connector, would be like a few thousand, 1,000 or 20,000.
But you actually input the full prompt, or you just take like the class token or something?
For ImageNet classification?
Yes.
I think the best thing that worked was this is a photo of the class. Yeah.
I'm not sure what the average across noising levels tells you in this case. Like, if you can expand on that.
Compared to just a single?
Yeah, because I could imagine if you had a score and you could, I don't know, take the integral of the curve over noising level, maybe that would tell you how efficiently you get to the, you know, to the error that you want. But the average, I'm just, I'm not
pretty
sure.
Similar to the integral.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
I think it boils down to the same
thing. So it's
kind
of like how efficiently the model gets the information about the caption at a very low noise, like at a very high noising level, kind of.
Right, or like any noising level,
yeah. Okay.
It's just that there's a lot of like in general like variance here, so you just reduce the variance by sampling across many noise levels, yeah, and also across many like actually you can also like what we also do is across sampling like different. You add the noise several times and then you average across that. So it's a very expensive procedure. It's definitely not the most efficient way to classify an image or assign it. But it was basically just to test through these models. Have they learned something compositional beyond just looking at their generated outputs? So now we can do a very like nice apples to apples comparison with Clip, and we can show sort of as a first proof of concept, this was the first work that showed it's on par with Clips on some benchmarks like Image Code. It was a bit worse than Clip on Winnowground. It was better. I don't think so. Looking back, this is not probably like it has never fully panned out to like turn diffusion models into actually really strong understanding models, but it was nice to see that with some simple tricks, it can get done. So coming back to our research question, how can we repurpose Stable Diffusion to assign such a score to an image? Just by leveraging sort of the training objective, the denoising objectives. And the takeaway here is that we now have a bit of a more unified model, or like at least we framed it in a way that now can do generation and understanding in one. And it also ties back to maybe this broader question of what is the relation between generation and understanding? Like can a model that, like is generation sort of always a prerequisite for understanding, or can you generate without understanding? Okay, that brings me now to the last part, multimodal interpretability, which I'm going to focus the most on today. It's also the most recent work. For other talks or other variants of these talks, I made also a pitch for why methods work, or like improved methods and multi interpretability should go hand in hand. But I think in this lab, I don't even know if I have to make that pitch. People maybe already like are convinced, But basically, here I'm just saying, if you want to get to unified architectures, representation, and reasoning, this has to go hand in hand with multimodal interpretability, and there's like rigorous theories, building inspection tools that are tailored for multimodality, and so on, so that we can understand, are these architectures actually learning some unified representation? And I see this more than a just extension of LLM interp. I think it's a great testbed for the generality of the tools we're building and the paradigms if they generalize beyond that. And actually, with Tamar, we are like right now preparing a workshop where we make that pitch. And I think the cool thing scientifically is also that many research.
Yeah, I know.
David is also on that.
But you let that faculty off the hook, right? It's like I just have to make sure nothing's nothing illegal is going on.
You looked over it, yeah. And I think from a scientific perspective, it's great because there's many research questions that you can only ask in a multimodal setting, like not in a unimodal setting. Like at what layers are like representation becoming more modality agnostic? Are there circuits that are like cross-modal? Or if you train from scratch, it's really interesting to know, like, at what stages of training is it easier to learn language? Is it easier to learn vision? Are they synergizing? And I think this also goes hand in hand with impact. In the future, I would argue all foundation models will be multimodal or will interact multimodally. So they will be deployed all over, not just on the internet, but even in the real world, need to be safe. So we need scientific understanding. And I think I would be excited to build like interpretability tools that assist other scientists and practitioners here to extend this toolkit that we now have for LLMs also to multimodality. So that brings me to my recent work, Latent Lens, where we at least make a first stab at that, where we reveal highly interpretable visual tokens in LLMs and show that visual tokens can be interpreted via contextual LLM embeddings, basically. So this is recent work that we put on Archive a few weeks ago with my nice collaborators that helped a lot. And I think it's also the kind of tool a bit where we found the kind of methods from like just unimodal LLM not quite answering the research question. So we came up with a new tool or method to answer this that's more tailored to multimodality latent lens. And the motivation for this was just like wondering about this, like, sure, like I'm pitching here unified models, but what has worked in practice the most the last 4 years is with very little change taking LLM and making it multimodal, like with a couple changes. And how that works so well. So look, at this point, we're all used to this. You can just ask an LLM, describe this image here. I took an image as an example of Northeastern University, and it can give you a great description. And beyond that, of course, it can do all kinds of things at this point. But how does a language model process images? Like, it's trained at the end of the day on language. And the cool thing is, even if you keep it frozen, it can kind of do this. So just for those who maybe are not as working on multimodality, the proven recipe that has worked really well is like you can keep your vision transformer, so your vision encoder frozen even. You just petrify your image, put them through the transformer, you get like a sequence of tokens. Then all you have to do is like take an MLP or like even a linear layer can work and map it into the LLM prefix space as one sort of sequence, kind of like you would put language there or soft prompts as well. And then you ask your even frozen LLM, describe it, and then the same objective, next token prediction, back prop to the MLP. And that's like a very simple recipe. Sorry.
After the describe, there is image.
Oh, that's the language. So, like, that's just like your prompt. Describe the image, please.
Describe the image.
It's two tokens.
It's text tokens. Yeah. It's just like image end, and then your
the slide is too smart. Yeah.
It's dead.
Yeah. So yeah, what we want to do here is shed light on this puzzling question: how can frozen LLM integrate non-linguistic inputs like visual tokens, and what do these visual tokens actually represent, kind of by the as they're processed by the LLM? For example, are they converted into word-like tokens? For example, at the input, like you would wonder, like are they already interpretable, or like language at the input, or does it happen like through LLM processing? And this is also like you could broadly answer this like this question: why is vision language so easy, and why does this work? You could give answers like the Platonic representation hypothesis, or maybe in pre-training, there's like visual prize you learn from pre-training. This is why this works. Or transformers are universal computation engines, or they've learned like some implicit world model, kind of what they show here in this paper from Roma Patel and Ellie Public, that they have this internal world model. So, but these are more like broad answers to why this works. It's not like a fine-grained answer on a token level, like what's going on. So that's why we have to now go deeper and look at the tokens. So what tools exist to study this, like on a just intuitive level? there's two things you can do. Like the most obvious one, what we call in the paper, is embedding lens. You want to know, like, are the, like, you just look at the nearest neighbors from the embedding matrix, basically. That's what we what is very intuitive. Are they at the input already interpretable? And what people also did with soft prompts. And I would say, like, the literature kind of says, like, not really interpretable. With soft prompts, there was also not much. So what people also started doing more recently on VLMs is using logit lens. I've seen, like, now many papers the last 1 or 2 years doing this. So same idea in a way. You just look at, in a way, like, nearest neighbors or, like, the prediction now with logit lens. And this would started late layers to work somewhat. People, it's been used for hallucination detection and so on. There's a question here.
Yeah, just a technical question. Like, when you chunk up the, when you map the image to these tokens that you're gonna then like pre will serve as a prefix for your LLM, how do you do this? Like, what does each token correspond to? Does the first token correspond to the top
Yeah,
left?
it's a grid, like.
But it just is like local. It's like in, it's like a sub image.
What's the typical number of sticks?
500, let's say, like 570 sticks.
500. You chop up your image into just 500 grids,
Yeah.
and then you
And
have a
then it's like
token.
row by row.
You have a token by for each
Just
one.
getting.
Yeah.
And
So it's very
Ben,
stupid in a way. Yeah.
okay.
and today, are those continuous token embeddings, or are they discrete?
They are continuous usually. I mean, there's experiments with discreteness, especially like more on the image generation side, people have tried discrete, but it's continuous. So that's also the question, like, how can that LLM deal with these non-discrete, non-language-like tokens that are continuous?
But the, so even though you have a grid, like the vision transformer is moving information for, it's integrating information from all the global context into the each of those patches, and it's
Exactly.
just
So they arrive
passing,
already
so you're
contextualized, like, in a
taking the
way.
final representations of each of those patches and passing them through some MLP that you're learning and then
Yeah.
putting them into the context of the LLM. Okay.
And instead of the MLP, people have tried other things, but the again, this sort of simple recipe is just MLP works fine.
And you use the same MLP on all those tokens in
Yeah, it's the same
parallel.
way. Yeah, that's good to mention. Like, it's the same way, it's just applied in isolation one by one. It's not like some elaborate situation. Yeah.
Do you still have causal masking happening on the image tokens?
People tried it, but at this point the recipe is also so simple that it's just applied. They apply the same thing as with the LLM, it's autoregressive.
The newer Gemma, they take off
I think in
the
Gemma.
masking
Yeah.
for the vision
Yeah,
tokens.
it seems like that would make
But
sense.
I don't think it improves well.
Yeah,
Okay.
recent models, like, it's like if it doesn't change much, just keep the same code base you have for LLMs
Yeah.
and run it on vision tokens.
Technical deep learning
scaling.
Yeah.
Everything works.
Yeah. So that means, like, yeah, your
Yeah.
top left token, for example, can't attend anything in the image, but your bottom right can attend everything
Yeah.
in the
I
image.
mean, but intuitively, the
Yeah.
vision transformer let it integrate all the
Right, so that
information
context is
into
already there,
the,
but
yeah.
in the LLM, you
Right.
couldn't do sort of,
That's the
yeah.
makes sense.
Yeah, so that's the puzzling question, like, how does this work so well? So yeah, these are the tools that exist, right? Like, if you just want to, like, intrinsically, like, learn this, of course you can do more elaborate things. You could try learning, like, for example, a probe. You don't have, like, a static embedding matrix. Now you have your classes as a matrix. But here the issue is, like, A, it doesn't give you insights about the relation to the LLM embeddings intrinsically. It's an external probe, and you actually need to put in effort, whereas these other tools, they just come out of the box. So that's why we mostly consider these as our baselines, but we also tried some, like, there's other, of course, you can try SEEs, we tried patch scopes a little bit. But we are mostly interested about the intrinsic sort of interpretability. And then we basically argue that you can do better than this, than what sort of past work has done or what we've seen so far with latent lens. And the key insight is, instead of, like, using a static embedding matrix, you want to retrieve nearest neighbors from LLM contextual embeddings. So what we mean by contextual is just that intermediate representation of the LLM, the embedding of dog would be different depending of if the context of here's my black dog, or, like, I'm eating a hot dog. And now you're not restricted anymore by, like, your static embedding matrix. Now these can be in principle infinite amount of contextual embeddings.
So context, is it language context or image context are you talking about?
Language context. So,
I
like,
see.
we kind of want to have the equivalent of these static embedding matrices, but just, like, not just the input level and the output level, so, but intermediate.
Got it. Can you build a bank of these contextual things?
Exactly, yeah. So, like, in practice, we can't do infinite. So we just think, what is a relevant corpus for, like, let's say vision, where we want to know, and like visual concepts are mentioned. So we just take a few million sentences that mention visual concepts, run them through our LLM, store the activations at different layers, not at all, because that's a bit expensive, like every fourth layer, let's say. And then you have like a sort of a dictionary at the end. It's like dog, like here's dog mentioned, this context, and so on.
So this corpus is a unimodal or multimodal corpus?
Unimodal. So like you just take your sort of
Just text.
just text, especially since the LLM is frozen. Like you can just take the same LLM, run your text through it, and it's kind of then the equivalent of your embedding matrix or unembedding matrix, but now just like embeddings in between.
I don't think I understand the experiment. Why is there an image?
I guess okay, we're not feeding the image at this point, we want to interpret it. So like the image is just there, yeah, like then you would as a second step run your like then you would run your image through this LLM again, like in a frozen setup, and then just look at the nearest neighbor. So I'll get to the setup a bit more in detail, but
Multiple 3 million sentences and collecting activation from storing them.
yeah, but that's sort of a separate first step where you just store them as like a few gigabytes of like sort of, and then you can look up nearest neighbors or for that vision, and then you run your vision. Your image through the model.
Can you maybe comment about why you think this is useful for multimodality? Like, I can imagine doing the same type of interpretations for language with language.
Yeah, so we've thought about, we've got a question from several, like when I gave the talk somewhere else. I think it can be useful for language, but I would be 50-50 how well, because if you want to know what a text token, what's the nearest neighbors for text token at some layer? By trivially, the nearest neighbors will be that text token, that same context itself. So you'd have to be careful, like maybe like a very similar sentence. If I want to know like what does my dog represent at layer something, maybe it would be a dog that's not the similar. Like I don't know how much that would tell you. So you'd have to be more careful if to, like selecting your cent your contextual embeddings to not be
Same.
infinite.
So, but you can say it's the same for the image, right?
No, because for the image, you don't know what like there's no trivial solution sort of what your nearest neighbor would be. Like it could represent like for with visual tokens, people often like I came into this project with the assumption that they don't have interpretable nearest neighbors often.
But you were wrong.
But I was wrong. Spoiler, yes.
MLP learned. Because that's what the MLP learned too.
Yeah, to map into the
Check.
contextual space instead of the input or output space. Yeah. Which is maybe
But
not that
then
surprising, but nobody has, or we nobody assumed this was the. Okay, we'll get to the results, but yeah, but I do think it's useful for like I'll get to this for future work, but for any type, you like whether you have latent thinking, soft prompts, speech tokens, VLAs. There's often situations where your LLM is not processing just text, and you want to know what it represents. So for that, I think it's useful for text only. Like again, I.
I think it would be interesting to run this.
Yeah, for multilinguality, people have talked about like using this.
Maybe.
Yeah.
So.
I also thought of this when I doing my logic length time.
Ah, nice. But you never tried it?
I mean, that's I think it shows you're a computer scientist, right? It's kind of annoying to implement.
Yeah. I mean, with Claude, it was easier, but yeah. But it's
It's a
actually,
great idea, yeah.
yeah. The Schmidhuber moment. We did this in 1990. No. No, I'm just joking. So we'll get to now like so the spoiler basically with latent lens you get really nice interpretations now. So here if you have the Northeastern building and here you have these colors, now you get your nearest neighbors for that vision token in the LLM processing would be white building with pillars. The second one like Cosine Similarity 0.47 with brownstone columns and so on. And we like I will get to more examples, but this is just to show what I mean here.
What was the logic sense interpretation of that cell?
Okay, I can jump ahead to the examples. Wait, that's okay. So logit lens, for example, would like the input our latent lens gives you already nice stuff like some like here we are gray tower with multiple clocks and we are on a clock tower. Is your nearest neighbors of this visual token the LM logit lens, of course at the input random. Then towards the output it gets a bit better like it's, this is Qwen, so you get some Chinese tokens, you get clock. But with logit lens, it's always like you get subwords, you get commas. Here you get leaves because there's a tree, and random stuff here. But with other things like again visible behind green foliage and so on.
What's the corpus you used for your snippet?
I just took Visual Genome because they had sort of very concise sentences. Like initially we tried conceptual captions, but the sentences were so long and random that sometimes we would get, I don't know, too random
It's
stuff.
already annotated.
But this corpus had very like distinct, like here's a tree next to a house. So like it was very atomic,
Something like that school and let
We tried Petscope. It was a bit finicky. Like we even reached out to Morgeva, like about like it would only work on some layers.
Same experience.
And yeah, this is also a bit more open-ended. Like it's again like not as directly intrinsic to the model, but it you can you, I think Petscope would be nice to make work for vision tokens. Yeah.
That's what starts working. We had a week there.
Yeah, so that's like we tried basically like we tried it for a week. We were like, okay, this might need more time. So we didn't we thought about including it as a baseline in the paper, but it felt like a proper project almost on its own to study.
So the text that come out of your method are the captions that match contextual embeddings retrieved from the
Yeah. So
corpus.
these are among the 3 million.
Yeah.
Yeah. So these are and I would emphasize that it's not the caption, but like so that word. So like that is specific, but in the
Yeah,
context of
in
that
the context.
caption.
Because
Oh. Oh. So you have a lot more
So it could have also
dependent.
matched with width, but width would have not been the nearest neighbors because like it's not as semantically
Oh, I
meaningful.
see. So you have 3 million sentences, but you might have like 50 million.
Yeah, but we kept it a bit more like we said per kind of token, we only keep 20 contexts. We kept it a bit more efficient. And also with the sentences, you will get a lot of repeated or very similar ones that are sort of filtered out as duplicates. So in the end, I think we had even less, like we had much less than 3 million because I kept it at 20. I kept it at 20 per, like for a dog token, just keep 20 contexts of dog.
Random
I see.
Random. But I'm currently like updating this corpus because we want to expand this as a toolkit in general. So we thought, what are all concepts human care about? We used WordNet to generate sentences for each WordNet concept, five for each one. And then it's more sort of a general any concept you care about situation. Yeah.
Is this cosine similarity?
Yeah, so this is cosine 0.47. Yeah.
Everything is on.
So it's this is a similar ballpark than what you would also find with language, because with the other thing is with embedding lens and logit lens, or embedding lens at least, the cosine similarities are also much lower. They're usually 0.2. Yeah. There's another
I
question.
guess my, yeah, the examples you've showed are like individual patches. If you look at the this lens on the like end image token, does it tell you about the like whole image as a whole?
We didn't see anything like this,
So that so it,
but
it
there are interesting phenomena similar to this.
so the LLM like doesn't it might not put together that this image is a image of like Northeastern.
There's no, I mean, the Northeastern will be mentioned, but all over the image. I can also show you the demo for Northeastern.
Sending.
That would be cool if you could show the demo.
Oh, you have a demo.
We have a demo, yeah. But I mean, I for like since demo takes Northeastern demo here, viewer.
Wow, you're all prepared.
So we can go here. So like the name, this would be, I don't know if it would say Northeastern, maybe here, North, Northern.
Northern.
So it's like it's on the text, it works really well. Like usually, like
Maybe
if I
like.
go here, like it would say university because it's university. And logit
Ah.
lens would say like stuff late, like random stuff. Because we also had layer age. So like if I go late layer, maybe logit lens would now work. It also says university.
Maybe on the logo.
On the logo. Inscription like here, logit lens is kind of worse.
No, 1917, 19. It was this year there.
Yeah,
Yeah.
wow.
There's one.
Emblem.
Oh,
So,
there's stuff working.
what? What?
vegetation and the on the.
What? Chris is like,
But
oh,
again,
I
this is
forgot. I should have made that.
it's all sort of
Yeah,
local information.
right,
I'm
right.
wondering, like, how the LLM eventually will know that it's a unified image of, the front of Northeastern
How good is
University.
it for text when you have a sentence full of
It just attends
Exactly.
everything, right?
So
And
then, but then the LLM has to learn how to, like, the LLM is frozen. And so I'm surprised that the attention
usually the
can.
LLM is going through some fine-tuning.
But in my settings,
But
it's actually frozen.
here. So the
Well,
only
there are
thing.
so like these are frozen. I was curious about how that was the question. Like, how can a frozen LLM do this? But then there are ablations where like we unfreeze the LLM. Yeah.
Okay. So the only thing being trained here is MLP. Is that right?
Yeah,
So like
the
the entry
MLP.
coder is frozen.
And even if you do linear connector, so just like a linear connection, not just MLP, it still works. So like we have a linear connection ablation here.
Shane, you?
Yeah. So if you solve like the VIP with Dino,
Features, does this still like recognize like text that way?
That's a great question. There's a slide on this.
See, this is what a job talk looks like, you guys.
So visual text is the most reliably interpretable. When you have your tokens come from Glip, they're usually like just the like at any layer, they're just the things that are written, the couch, tomato. I kept it very on purpose to show how hard this task is for the model. When it's Dino, it's still interpretable, but it's very generic. So letter describing messages, letter, screenshot, letter. Okay, so now I showed you, going back to where I was, I showed you like roughly how this works, but we want to study this in a controlled setup, not just take one or two off-the-shelf models because they can often give like very different results. So we train in total 9 models, like 3 by 3. We take different vision encoders, we take different LLMs, and we do actually find that this matters. Like the results are very different across different combinations.
Like, can I just interrupt?
Yeah.
The reason why Dino is interesting is because Dino doesn't use text supervision,
Exactly.
right?
I was
But
going to
Scikit
mention it,
and
yeah.
Clip does then
So
do that.
exactly. So Dino is just trained with sort of like self-supervised objectives, which is why we wanted to include it and see like, do we find less interpretability there? And we find, I'll spoil it again, we'll find the same level, but it is more generic often and less sort of detailed. So yeah, we trained this controlled setup and now we can actually look, quantify this. We look inside the LM now. On the x-axis, we have the layers as the vision token progresses through the LM. On the y-axis, we have the percentage of interpretable tokens. Now you might be wondering, how do we quantify this? In the past, people just used like class, like maybe if it's the class of the MS Coco or like whatever. Instead, we kind of work on an LLM judge that does what a human would do here intuitively as well. You look at the sentences, you look at the patch, and you just say, is it semantically related? And you have different categories for semantically related, directly, globally related. So if it encodes, for example, a global concept, it would say this is globally interpretable, and so on. And we make sure this correlates with humans like quite well.
In your job talk, people might say that this is a strange way to implement a judge, given that you just convinced them that GPT is not good at visual reasoning or something.
Right,
So you need to think about
but I think this task is easier than
different.
the task that I'm talking about. Like it's still like you just have to know that there's a building with pillars, for example, here to say that
Yeah, it's not
it's
perfect.
yeah.
How do you? Is it something that talks about the level or is it an order? Like all the findings that.
I was a bit, I would say it's a bit more LLM centric, but it because we try different vision encoders and find different results, like it also tells you something about the vision encoders. But for me, the big puzzle was really how can a frozen LLM, like what are the general things in the LLM that can make this possible? And especially coming in, like thinking these are not interpretable, I was like, if they're not looking like language, like how is the LLM doing it? Like what processes are they is it going through? Yeah.
Right, so I think there was a, I think Sarah Portland had something similar where they had a
similar, but
small,
they did it the logic end.
They did the logic and a
Yeah.
small MLP
Yeah.
linear layer. So it, like this linear layers reminds me of probes, right? Like where we are trying to say that.
You mean the linear connector, like MLP?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What it reminds me is that, oh, maybe the vision encoder already has such rich language information
Yep.
that you need just a linear layer to connect it to an FFM.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's the cool thing that these representations are maybe implicitly already very aligned. Just
Yes.
need to be.
Other way around, I think the vision encoder, which is interesting. Like, I think that's where you're sort of seeing this.
Yeah. Because the LLM still has to do a lot of work, I think, to make sense of this at the end of the day. Yeah. But yeah, it's yeah, free to use it, whether you're a vision person or LLM person, it hopefully gives you insights in both ways. So yeah, now the findings. So embedding lens, just using the embedding matrix, already shows medium to high interpretability even at the input. So that's kind of the first thing when the project started, we tried embedding lens and we were surprised that for some models, this is the OLMO variance. So like when you use almost the LLM backbone, the interpretability is like half of the tokens are now interpretable.
How do you measure the bias?
So just the LLM judge that I talked about. So like it's a bit expensive, so we don't run it on like millions of examples, just I think per model, like a few hundred examples. But since we have 9 models and stuff, like yeah.
And then the bars around it, that's the confidence interval.
No, this is sort of the like we have 9 different models, and I
Oh, I
didn't want
see.
to show like 9 different models. Just the lowest model we can see, like, is what people often expect. That is not that interpretable at the input, But with some other models, these are the Olmo variants, where the LLM-backed one was Olmo, like it's 50%. Then we apply logit lens. Again, we see the same trend, like some models are super low, even at the late layers. Like I think this is also, in general, a situation with logit lens. It doesn't work for all models as well, for some reason. And for other models, as the literature has already established, it goes up to even like 80%. So that's kind of nice. But it's, again, only late layers, only on some models, so also not great. And now comes the cool finding with the right lens. So latent lens, like visual tokens are very interpretable across all layers and all models. So even your lowest model is still at 60%. Your highest is around 80.
Does latent lens use a different di dictionary for every layer?
Great question. This brings us to the next slide in a way. I explicitly didn't mention the detail of like which layer you match with. And also here again, we tried PatchCop, but didn't quite work as we discussed. I'll come to this. Maybe I'll jump to this first, not to his question. This is one last puzzle, actually. How can latent lens outperform embedding lens even at the input layer? Because as you can see, a big difference. And at the input, there's no contextual embeddings at layer zero. There's like they don't exist. So maybe you're already noticing where I'm getting with this, or like also with David's question, like, do you have an is this a puzzle for you? Or like or do you see the solution that I'm getting at? Just gonna give a second if people have wanna.
Layer zero, right? It's literally after the embedding.
So this is when the vision token just arrives at the LLM and hasn't even been processed at all. And then we apply either embedding lens or let's say the embedding lens would make the most sense at that point, right? But it doesn't work as well. And then we also apply latent lens and.
Yeah, I would guess that you're matching against maybe the union of the layers. Or...
Almost not even the or the union. Yeah, sorry, yeah, the union. Yeah.
Because it also doesn't matter, right? Because you're, I mean,
yeah.
you do retrieval over your.
Exactly. So we just our pool of contextual embeddings comes from like can be from layer 8, layer 16. You can get the nearest neighbor from anywhere.
So you're actually you can tell something about what the MLP is doing, right?
Okay,
Yep.
so
By looking at them.
so you're saying that the MLP has
It learns to map to later
yeah
layers.
learn to map to late layers.
So this is yeah.
Sorry. Doing some heavy lifting over there. No,
It
it's a
says
vision transformer and the MLP.
it says
Yeah.
it says I have contextual
But the MLP
concepts.
is the only
I'm just
label
going to
down
insert them at layer zero because
in
that's
the
where I'm
first
attached.
yeah.
Yeah,
But
but
then you pass the info, then the residual stream just passes that on
representation of which
without much
layer.
change. Yeah. We'll show that here, but there's also a question about this.
It's
Ah.
because you're doing actually
Got it.
retrieval on the length.
Yeah.
And literally only
Because you
after
gave so many
embedding,
hints.
And you gave a
it's
lot of
always the
hints.
last row.
But it's good.
Right?
We figured out anyway.
It's only sorry,
Like I'm saying again, it's time we can hot
Did you
dog,
see it
right?
already before
No,
him?
I couldn't see
You map this sentence
it.
to the latent of the last
It
token.
could be like could be a middle talk, could be hot. Hot
Yeah.
if you want to match with hot in hot dog, like yeah. Okay.
I mean, you are mapping your image latent and you're extracting from, let's say, your corpus of
Yeah.
documents. And each of the document in your corpus, they map you a single latent. How you're deciding that? I'm assuming, I just assume that is the last token. It's one of the latents of the last tokens of that sentence.
But we're storing all of them. So
Just
like
one
for
token.
like you pass your sentence through the LM, you store for a subset of your layers and all the token positions, like
All
your
the tokens.
yeah. So
Okay.
it could be the first one.
And multiple layers for each token.
And multiple layers for each
So
token.
like
Okay.
when we go back here, like for example, this nearest neighbors came from layer 16
Yeah.
and its pillars, but it could have been like this is not the end of the sentence, right? There's more coming here. Like it's just some position.
Okay. Now, at embedding at pillars, pillars does not have any information about the white building width,
Right.
Yeah.
right?
Right.
Right.
No, it does. It does.
At layer zero.
Oh, layer zero. Yeah, layer zero. No.
But we are
It's
not
just field.
looking at
It's
this.
not.
We're not looking at embedding vectors. We're looking at whatever comes out of putting the vision transformer embedding through the MLP. Right. Wait, that's not as well.
No. That
No.
is not my question actually. Because the mapping, the text mapping, it has to come from the embedding itself. And the embedding only has information about the token, not the contents.
That's only true for layer zero
That's
activations.
only true
Yeah.
for layer
But
zero.
for
Yeah.
every token in their corpus, they're taking a layer zero activation, they're storing a layer four activation, layer
So for
four
layer zero,
embedding.
we don't store anything. We just have embedding
Have
lens. But yeah,
embedding,
like
right?
we have layer one. And to tell you exactly, like we take layer 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 24, 31, 32, so that we have a.
So you search over all of that space
Yeah, like we have a
for.
union over that space.
Okay.
Yeah. And then we just take the highest top five nearest neighbors.
What's the interpretability score?
The interpretability is the here?
Seven humans.
Oh, it's the LM judge. It looks at, okay, in detail, it looks at the top five nearest neighbors that our thing retrieves and just says, like, is one of them like semantically related to your image?
To your image.
Or like to the patch of the image. It sees both the image and the little patch, and then it can either say it's locally related, it's globally related, or it's abstractly related.
Do you look at the residual stream always, or
I'm sure you can find maybe interesting as a side project, interesting things somewhere else.
Consider the layer norm stuff.
No, but
it's just cosine. But if you do logit lens, you do layer norm and then apply the cosine sim or
look at that.
And it makes a big difference. It matters.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, for us, it started working, so I didn't honestly think about this too much.
Embedding lens is super weird because you don't know what you are supposed to do, right?
Because I'm embedding,
And so when you build this method, then.
I'm curious to hear more about this after. Maybe. No. I was very surprised.
If it's not implemented like that, you wouldn't find this out. It's really.
So actually, oh, do you mean the results of the
mixing up the layers?
Yeah, this was a bug that I had.
What do you mean?
I had a bug where, like, I was by accident.
The layers
are. I was by accident, like, comparing. Like, initially, I thought I would just compare it with the same layer.
Yeah. That's the way to do it.
And then I had a.
That's why I would implement it.
Yeah, I thought I had implemented like same layer, but I was comparing to the always layer 8 by accident or something. And then I was like, wait, why am I getting this high interpretability at even at layer 0 with layer 8?
Cloud codes too well. You would never have discovered it.
It happened. It even happened with Cloud Code. It happened with Cloud Code, I think. And then someone was like, wait, Cloud, why do we have this here? Like, and I was like, oh no.
Do you have an analysis? Like, which layer?
Randomly
so let's get back to the. Uh-huh. So basically. Oh, sorry. Okay. Yeah.
So for the latent lanes, it makes sense because you have some context there.
Yeah.
And I'm imagining even if some of the early tokens get picked up, you give the entire context to the LLM as well, right?
I have to be honest here. Like we tried making the LLM judge work with the whole context, but it was either over or under interpreting often. Like it would either be too strict or not strict enough. So we actually only gave it sort of the full word, and not the sentence. So that means like. It's possible that the interpretability is even a bit higher because sometimes it could be a word that's not interpretable, but the context is. But also the LLM just was a bit noisy. So, and this way, it's also at least a fair comparison because then with logit lens and embedding lens, it's also like word-based.
Yeah, exactly. But, that was the question. If you're giving only the word,
we sort of give ourselves a little advantage by merging the word with nearby until we hit white space. So that, because our method, the nice thing is you do get the context sort of for free. So even in this case, I think it might've been pillar and then the S or like, you know, like coll and then ums, and we merged it and give the LLM judge the full. Yeah. But we tried full sentence LLM judge and it was a bit finicky. Yeah. And then we post-hoc argued that it would also be a nice apples to apples comparison. So going to this, I'm gonna, for the sake of time, because since there's, which I'm happy about, so many questions, I'm gonna skip over some things. We showed the inserts hold also in a controlled setup. So like when the on Gwen 2 with 2 VL, where the, for example, the LM would also be fine tuned on a lot of things and not just frozen. So you see a similar trend that it just works. We also like did lots of ablations. I think the two most interesting ones to mention are when you update the LM during training, it's even more interpretable by like a little bit. And if you replace the MLP with a linear mapping, so that gets back to how similar these representations are, you get the same interpretability roughly. So it's really easy to map between these frozen models. Back to this puzzle that we now touched on. So the explanation for why even at layer 0 this works is like, if you have a layer of the visual tokens in the LM, let's say layer 0, and you want to know where are most of your nearest neighbors coming from, you can basically see that most of them for this model come from layer 8 actually. Mm-hmm. So it's already most aligned to layer 8 when it comes out of the vision encoder and the MLP just learns to map to that space. And then it just maybe gets passed along with the from the residual stream. And then at layer 8, then you see this more intuitive diagonal pattern where like you have the corresponding layer situation.
Oh, that's beautiful figure.
Yeah. So beautiful. How do you avoid being like messed with? Because like this vector is still processed by 0, 1, 2, blah,
But it's
blah.
residual stream.
Yeah,
So
sure.
just like step
But
so it has to figure out like
how do you
how
not
to
get
avoid
bullied by the other layer?
ask, ask residual
Oh, you mean
retrograde.
how
Yeah.
there's not sort of like the attention doesn't mess up, the attention module doesn't mess up your representation?
How does the LLM know not to chat to touch it until
Yeah,
it's
I also don't know, to be honest.
big?
It's a high dimensional space.
Yeah.
Most things are orthogonal. Law of large numbers.
So this is also the part where I'm curious to hear
You
from
could
you
have always
guys.
just said this.
There is no, you can't mess up. Take care of the mess up. Yeah,
So
just
like
like
we
you
have,
can take care of, I don't know, what? Making sure everybody's okay.
I mean, it obviously works.
it works, and we have also we have. So these are. I have some
Mess
backup
up.
slides also on this.
Carlene will tell you all the ways
Wait.
to like mess up. You've got this adversarial thing. We're sure it'll mess up sometimes,
So like it's interesting, for example, here I'm gonna
right?
walk it off. We measure like for the same token, like the similarity, cosine similarity across layers. So like the value here would mean
It's
if I
not
compare
statistical
the
here.
token at layer 13 to its own, the same token
It's
at
just
layer
moving
zero,
from
what's
layer
the
to layer
cosine
zero.
similarity? For language, it goes down quickly, so tokens change a lot. For the vision tokens, they sometimes don't change at all. For the cichlid and dino variants, or they go down only at the end. For the Olmo variants, they go down a bit more.
Try checking the norm of the visual tokens
They're very
before.
high
They are
sometimes.
very high.
They're
This
crazy high
is
sometimes.
kind of explained.
I
Oh,
have a slide for this one.
that's
Sorry?
how.
Sorry, what did
That's
you say?
because
For choice.
that's right. That's how you do it. Because it's
Yeah.
layer norm.
Right.
You're Mr. Layer Norm,
Right. You cancel
right?
the rest.
So sometimes you will have
Yeah.
layer norms that are like, I mean, it's not the highest here actually, but if
Wow.
you go here, you have layer norms that are like, so the vision tokens layer norm is sometimes like for the sort of on the text side, you have layer norms not layer norms, L2 norms, like maybe like 10 or like 20. For division tokens, it can go up to 10,000. Like your highest one would be 10,000. Your 1% would stop
I
here.
see. But that's how it's
That's
blasting
how it
through. It's
works.
how it's blasting
Yeah.
through layer 8,
There.
right?
Have you
Yeah.
considered just fixing the whatever the linear layer gives and feeding that to
Yeah.
Just like by the amplitude,
freezing
kind
it?
of like
Just freezing it
that's like
and
what
not
layer 8
like just
does.
skipping, basically skipping 8 layers and then
just not
No,
doing anything
what's the
with the
layer norm?
LLM, the visual
Oh.
will
So
Yeah.
for the image
Right, you see?
tokens, rather than letting the model compute on it, just
Yeah.
literally freezing it to the output of the
Yeah.
MLP
Right.
for all those token positions for the vision
What do you mean
token.
by freeze? Like,
Like you take for one image patch, you have the output of the MLP, right? And then what you're doing is you're letting the LLM compute on it, right? Instead of letting the LLM compute on it, just like copy and paste that everywhere at every layer.
Right.
Do people do that?
I've seen, I think,
So you
yeah.
copy
Like
paste the
basically,
visual token,
yeah,
but
because it never
actually,
has to do a prediction
yeah,
task on this token.
and also like, why would the
just put the
LLM?
value of it.
Why would the LLM know how the hell to process that
So
thing or something? It
my
looks like the entropy is
hypothesis is
bypassing
that
the
the LLM
MLP.
still processes it, it writes stuff, but it is so negligent, like it is
Right.
so
So,
so
but then
small
it, so then
that
this
it
should
just
work.
completely
This should work as
different.
well.
How strict are we on time, by the way? Should
Not
I
straight.
just
Not
not
very
be okay? So
flexible.
we okay. We're flexible. I
We're gonna kick you out.
just want to make sure to at least somewhat slides here.
So great results.
Yeah. So I'm actually like, this is also something where I can probably learn from you guys. I've only been working on interpretability for like a year now. I think some here I've worked for 5 or 6 years. So you have probably good intuitions on, or more than 5 or 6 years.
More.
You have probably better intuitions than me about some of this residual stream stuff, what's going on here.
So,
I
there is
to
a
understand why
self-computation
are
going
people
on.
having an error? Is the
Exactly.
LLM is destroying or not? So the prediction task,
Gonna do
they're
that
not doing
question
anything
today.
for the prediction of visual tokens, right?
Right, they're
There's
not.
no loss sort of on them at
So
all.
don't understand why you're talking about.
Yeah, why be so nice to these neural networks? Just blast them. If it works.
Yeah. And to be fair, like I mean, we are scientifically interested in like the frozen setup. If you do fine-tune the LLM, they will change a bit more. Like we have the same plots also for the Gwent 2.7, and there's a similar trend, but it's a bit less. So like instead of being like this, it would maybe be like more similar to language.
Right.
They do change a bit
It
more.
kind of reallocates compute
Yeah.
towards
So
something more useful.
this whole skipping or like freezing thing would be nice scientifically, but I think in practice people fine-tune and they want things to change a little throughout the layers.
I'm just curious about
if there's any performance dip.
Wait, so isn't the blue straight line meaning that it doesn't change from layer zero?
Yeah.
What's blue versus pink here? I'm sorry.
Blue is visual tokens, red is text tokens, and how much they sort of same token like similarity, cosine similarity.
Oh, I see how much they change.
So, and X changes a lot.
So for Quen 2.7 billion, it means that it over the outputs, whatever it needs in layer 32.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. There's no change to the vision tokens at all, basically.
I think it's really surprising.
Yeah.
But you could achieve that by having a very high norm, right? Because all your residuals that get added from your MLP and your attention will go through layer norm. So all the deltas are all bounded to this small norm. So if you go in with something with norm a million,
that's how it achieves it.
That's how it achieves it.
That it already knows what it needs to have at layer 32. You know, it's supposed to be like a heavy computation. No,
but I think the assumption here is just it just needs the value of the visual token. There's no like more information other than this pitch contains a red something. Red. Like that's all it needs. It doesn't like because the language model backbone was not fine-tuned. There's no computation, like, why would we assume that there is computation happening on top of visual tokens? It seems like in some cases,
I think,
if it's just red, then even just an embedding that contains red would change, right? So why wouldn't a vision?
Wait, if all you need is just like the value red that later layers would fetch.
But it's still a hard task because this is a 1D sequence. So knowing like that red is on like sort of this object right now and like, so also the spatial, like the sort of the positional embedding reasoning, I think can be, it's interesting that it works so well, that the model knows it's the red ball here, not the red cube, or like,
yeah. 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 Well,
like, sorry. Already processed there. Because it's already, the encoder already processed it, so it's like starting from the eighth layer in the LLM. Right?
In a way, yeah. But it's cool that they're so implicitly aligned that it works. Mm-hmm. Right.
So then it's supposed to work, it's already processed.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to have all the
questions. No, but it is weird, right? I mean, when Andy asks, why don't we try to be a little bit more gentle with the LLM? Like it's funny that it doesn't mess up the LLM attention and things like this, having these high norm things sitting around, right? It's really not prepared to have something that's way out of domain. It's funny that it works.
That this is what people call this universal computation engine. You just throw anything at it and.
Did you try this on like a like time series, like a video, like frames of a video? Like, can it understand like if I have like a sequence of images of like my dog running? Like,
so I haven't tried it, but it's one of my follow ups that I would want to study. Maybe like multi like action across video frames. How are they encoded? Do they change? Are they encoding? Are they
causal knowledge too from like?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
So, like, I mean, this is a future question I'm curious about. Like, with right now, we find mostly nouns and adjectives as nearest neighbors. If you have videos, would we find more verbs and action phrases? Mm-hmm. Or would they encode actions also? Would they encode actions also more as like a sequence of nouns and adjectives? Or are actions implicitly coded in languages, verbs? Just one idea, yeah.
So, in the experiments where you fine tune the LLM, do you only fine tune the projector and the LLM, or do you also fine tune the vision encoder?
I think in that experience, only the LLM and projector, but you can do the vision encoder as well.
It feels like doing this kind of like grafting, it's like you're almost like splitting up what the representation has to do. Like the vision encoder just has to write the information and
has to be available for you.
Yeah, and the LLM is just reading it, which is why it doesn't change throughout. Mm-hmm. And feels like there could be like a similar kind of analysis, but like in the vision encoders,
right? That they know,
like, yeah,
they can get even better at like presenting the information in a language friendly way,
yeah.
Is this recent with the LLM fine-tuned or is it just the MLP connector?
This is just MLP connector, but so when you like we looked at the same plot, I don't have it here on for the off the shelf Gwen 2 VL, there you see this trend, but much less pronounced. So, like, then at layer zero, it would connect to layer four. But then at layer one onward, it would be very diagonal. So like only at layer zero, you have to map to a bit of more contextual space. And then it's again, but it would be the same thing, but starting basically only happening here at the first one or two layers.
Just like one patch, like one embedding of the image, and just ask the LLM to describe it.
give something reasonable.
I don't think you can do that because you need to have a certain amount of visual tokens. Like these architecture are kind of like as soon as you have an image.
No, you are not fighting the LLMs.
But you can do like, I mean, that's the idea of like when you do patch scopes with a vision token, that's what you do try. You're doing context learning and you patch a single token in and see if it works. It worked fast, but more in late layers. So you could do it also like play with individual tokens, like maybe you take four tokens because most concepts are more than one token. Like, you know. So yeah, we already talked about the examples, so I can skip those maybe for time, but just the sort of on a qualitative level, now we get nice phrases, some more fine-grained interpretability that actually describe the thing usually quite well. And as I mentioned, visual text is sort of the most sort of reliably interpretable. There's intriguing quirks also of logic lens, like that it actually does next token prediction. So versus like latent lens kind of gives you what is actually in the image or like in this token. Logic lens will often give you like plausible next token prediction, like couch potato. And it will even do next token prediction on the actual one, like tomato here, where you can argue that either it was already in the vision encoder encoded that, because this is like autoregressive, so it can't attend tomato, since the tokens only can attend here. So either it knew from the vision encoder this, or it saw it maybe up here in the Google Maps thing.
Interesting.
I don't know if that's a feature or bug of logic lens. I feel like it's sometimes more of a bug, but I don't know. I'm happy that latent lens gives us like directly couch here. We didn't study downstream effects too much, but this is something people often ask about. One thing we looked at but didn't find good results basically was there's a lot of non-interpretable tokens, or not a lot, but like 20-30%. They usually have lower cosine similarity. They're in non-salient regions, so it's a bit like maybe could you remind you of register tokens? Mm-hmm. So we were wondering, are they useful downstream or can they be thrown away? And we got very strange mixed results. Depending on the model, they would either be more useful than the interpretable ones or much less useful. So we were replacing them with the average image value across our data set.
And you didn't try to triangulate with register tokens, right? So you don't know if the ones that you're throwing away are register tokens or not.
I'm not an expert on them, but like my intuition was that, or like what I understood from the papers, that they find them by just saying the ones with the high norm. So we checked it and we didn't find a big correlation with whether these are the high norm or not high norm tokens. Or that was like one of the other collaborators where I told him like, hey, can you check if these are register tokens? Sure. And he came and said like, yeah, with the high norm, I didn't find anything. Which is because we thought maybe it's just the register tokens. Yeah. So this is open still a question. Yeah.
I played with this kind of VLMs some time ago with saliency, and actually these were coming up to like this kind of high norm tokens. And in our case, we tried to just master them and the task was going to zero.
Yeah.
So they were kind of like, you know, playing this kind of very important role in the model. I wonder if it's the same.
Yeah, they might contain like abstract information.
Yeah.
So either they maintain global information, or since they're also the same across images, maybe it's more of a task in like task vector. It's like now you're a captioning model. I don't know. That's just a hypothesis. Yeah. Coming back to the research question, kind of the answers now to does the LLM convert visual tokens into words? I would say kind of yes. The majority of visual tokens are close to meaningful words, and we had to develop a new interp method to answer this. The existing ones didn't quite work for us. The takeaways are that yes, this was surprising also for us. We actually didn't think even this would like be that's contradicted our assumptions and intuitions and the literature in a way. And I would recommend people at least try latent lens next to your usual logic lens if you're curious. Like, of course, for vision tokens,
yes,
yeah. I'm releasing this as a library right now. There's like where it's very easy to like pip install latent lens.
How many activations?
Well, we don't need an end. After all, it's already there.
How many activations do you need to assert over? We get good results.
We didn't do a great ablation list, but we did one ablation that was kind of interesting, and which was like, it's a bit weird. This is some fish situation. I don't know. Basically, what I imagine latent lens V2 to look like is like you don't want to have a massive corpus. You want to dynamically generate sentences that maximize the cosine similarity. So we did a small experiments on a couple images where we have a sort of evolutionary search where the LLM generates variants of the initial sentence. This was what our fixed corpus gave us, man wearing white stripes, which is already a good interpretation. And then if you ask an LLM to modify its individual words, and then we take the top whatever, like evolutionary search, we get colorful fish with white stripes.
Without seeing the images.
No, without seeing. I just asked the LLM like, hey, like remove or replace tokens. Like 10 at a time, and then we have six rounds of it.
Maybe some sort of gradient search, or it's just like kind of
the codes on similarities. You're sort of what you want to you throw away the other ones and keep the top three codes on similarity.
Yeah, but like to inform which changes you make to the sentence.
It was random.
Just random
search. Yeah, because it was just a one-day experiment that I quickly ran, so it was like just when like what can how can I make this better quickly? Yeah.
Is there some like jailbreaking literature where they use gradients to inform which tokens it might change? Although it's questionable whether that really helps them. But
Yeah, there's some fundamental insight hopefully here about also just the structure of vision language representations. And we will like I'm right now like it's already on GitHub, and I'm hopefully in a couple of days it will be as a pip install latent lens you can just run, and there will be sort of pre-computed databases of these contextual embeddings, because otherwise it is a bit more effort than logit lens. It takes you half a day to run this and to store like 20 gigabytes of contextual embeddings. But also we now use a smaller corpus that is more concepts from WordNet, so it will be a bit more efficient. Yeah.
It's something end of Qzbos actually. Mm-hmm. You can send a tensor, you can send an activation, and then it could return you the top.
This would be great. Like if this was hosted, like
downloading a 20 gigabyte thing.
Yeah. We were thinking about hosting this, but then we were like, if people could host this would be amazing. I would be happy to help set this up. And I think it will be useful beyond vision, like whether you do speech or latent thinking or even text or multilinguality, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
just
six
supports VLANs and diffusion, right?
Yeah, or just this KNN databases of vectors in general. I think that's interesting. Yeah.
So yeah, some lessons learned from this project also for I included this for people especially starting in the field, or what I wish I had known maybe at the beginning of my PhD is test your assumptions early. I didn't even think they were interpretable for a couple of months and didn't even test it properly. I just believe the papers I was reading, kind of. So the field is not settled. Models are different. Interactive demos from day one can surface these assumptions early. Now with Claude Code, there's no excuse like just to build a demo like on whatever you work on.
I found it at 2:30.
exactly. Yeah, and I'm a bit I would recommend maybe not to people here because they're already doing it, but at least one interpretability project in your PhD is, I think, is a good exercise to like compared to like just modeling or dataset work that I've done before more. And also when I started this, like start with an interesting research question, not a particular interim method, mm-hmm. I would say. Like I'm plugging this, you know, like every
I love it. It's actually very good advice. Yeah. This is all good advice. Great.
And I usually try to capture these lessons and like in every paper I include a behind the scenes section where I say the goal of this section is not is to make science more transparent and engaging, showing not just the polished paper at the end, but all the details and lessons learned. And then I just say like, you know, like here, the first author, like originally visual language was the term to pivot towards understanding. So interpretability was the natural direction, but doing the interrupts just for the sake of it did not feel like the right approach. So what was an actual fundamental question that people cared about and so on. So then I like explain like how we got there.
Good idea.
Yeah.
You should highlight it. So we can all see the good advice even easier.
Yeah, true. I added this like 10 minutes before the presentation. Like, yeah. There's some exciting follow-ups. As I mentioned, like latent lensing 2 would look like this. Can we now interpret any non-linguistic token LMs? Like, as I said, like there's all these other things that people have done in the past. And I'm currently exploring this a little with an undergrad. And how do we study multi-token concepts? Because especially like in language, it's already tricky, but especially in vision, like it's even more... Like tokens do not represent your object, they're just random parts. So we should get to methods that can do this as well. I have a roadmap now what I actually want to work on in the future. But we're also like quite over time, so I'm happy to like skip. Okay, we have until 2. Okay, but if people need to leave, that's also fine. Like I think now is maybe a good time. So yeah, as I said, my North Star is unified multimodal models. And I mean the details are open, but what I broadly imagine is just a flexible modality agnostic reasoning model. You can say to reason deeply and it just generates any tokens it needs to do this, whether that's text tokens, vision, speech, or even latent like thinking. That's kind of the broad vision. And I would say like in the future, maybe in a couple of years, we will not even think about anymore like whether like the type of tokens, and we just assume the model generates some tokens in its thinking. So how do we get there? What's the roadmap towards this? And or like what would I be excited about? And how can interpretability guide us or me and my work here? I would say the basis has to be like just working on better unified architectures and training. And then there's some downstream things that get enabled from it, I'm just showing two here as an example: modality agnostic reasoning and multimodal embedding extraction. And along the way, I think interop can guide us as a compass. So for the first one, it's actually like when you want to think about future architecture, it's good sometimes to look back to history, how things have evolved in visual language. And it's funny to see that it has actually, there's no clear trend towards more unification. When vision birds came up in 2018, they were more unified than past, I would say past models. But then when multimodal LLMs came around, they were, I would argue, less unified. They were like, you take two pre-trained models, just stitch them together a little. Then,
Everything else is expensive.
Yeah. But then people said, like in 2024, especially Luke Settlemore's group at Meta, like we need native unified training. They developed Chameleon and so on. And it didn't work that well. Luke is quite honest about this in his talks. So people did partially, I would say, what the people are doing now is partially unified. So we can see the field has not really settled at all on like what's the best way to unify architectures. Should we train from scratch? Should we do shared weights? What are the objectives? Should it be the same one or diffusion with next token? So we need really fair ablation studies here, which is, to be fair, hard on an academic budget, but maybe we can still get there. And on the way, also do interpretability, like are these, like whatever changes we make in the ablations, like are they leading to more internal unification or synergy between the modalities? And there's some recent evidence, for example, in the opposite direction in a way, that there was a paper like from, I think, NeurIPS 2025, that when you do fully unified training from scratch, sort of on both modalities, no like pre-trained LLMs, you get lower internal unifications, like the modalities are separate. And actually, just a single end of image token is mostly attended by the text, not the rest of the image. So that's, but then they show like if you loosen some of the assumptions of fully unification and you start from a pre-trained LLM, it's much better sort of from an inter perspective. So this is, yeah. Then multimodal embedding extraction is just one sort of good test bit from are your representations now unified. The goal would be here, let's say you have a very flexible, promptable embedding that summarizes your multimodal context. So for search and so on. And on the text-only side, this has worked quite well. Like my lab at, like with Siva has released LLM2Vec like 1 or 2 years ago. And my hope would be if a model is very unified, it should be much easier, like out of the box, to make it give you like a multimodal embedding that summarizes everything. If it's not unified, the representations, maybe it would be very hard that you can ask your LLM to do that. And you need a lot of sort of additional fine tuning. So here would be interesting from inter perspective, how does the final end of sequence token actually aggregate all this information into one summarized vector? And then that's the one I think is the most exciting one is modality agnostic reasoning. Again, a good test bed, like you need good representations to reason over. And here I think the goal would be to have a model that actually flexibly can choose itself to switch between it. Right now, like we already see a bit of like visual and latent reasoning research, but it's like very often we say like here's a visual talk, so you have to use visual reasoning. But yeah, the model should just decide this itself. And here, I think here are the most fascinating interp questions, like how similar are these different thinking tokens? Like that does latent thinking or visual thinking still, are these tokens then still very similar to language, like what we found now in with latent lens? Or are they sort of fundamentally different? And similarly, are the reasoning patterns that we know from language, like the idiosyncrasies of reasoning, like backtracking and whatever, is it the same in visual or latent reasoning, or is it like a different form of reasoning? Like that's maybe more like what we would call visualizing spatial reasoning. But there's also many other directions I'm happy to collaborate on, like, as I said, to interrupt insights and tools generalize to multimodality, like the ones we know from LLMs, revisiting the Platonic representation hypothesis, as I mentioned, understanding not just visual reasoning, but latent reasoning, interpretability of world models, I think maybe you are working on more. And what I added also like yesterday is implications of Claude Code moment on interp research or on research in general. Some food for thought at the end. So these are questions that motivated me to go into research and still kind of motivate me when I philosophize. What cannot be expressed in language? Are there things we can't express in language, or can everything be expressed? Like Wittgenstein has thought about this. The best quote I could find from him was, if a lion could talk, we could not understand him. And on vice versa, can the physical world be understood from text alone? Is the abstract thought without language even, so is language like the one thing you need? And this relates to the grounding question that Hanard formalized in the 1990s and other people as well. So how can the meaning of meaningless symbols be grounded in anything but other meaningless symbols? So I'll leave you with that food for thought. And yeah, thank you for listening. These are like the people that collaborate with me. And here's the demo and also hopefully soon pip install latent lens. Cool. Yeah, if there's, I mean, we've already had a great discussion, but if there's even more questions, let me know. Yeah. Whoever was first.
Like, can you go back to the Wittgenstein quote?
Yep.
Well, my question spawned before you said the Wittgenstein, but I think it maybe it was a way of testing the Wittgenstein. So I was thinking, like, these vision models, you know, okay, they process the image, they what you're showing is that, like, for each patch, you know, the thing it produces is sort of, you know, like a you could think of it maybe as a text summary of that patch.
Yeah.
And then this is sort of how the language model is going to work with it. If you ask it questions about the image, like, it's going to look back to those patches, which are approximately, like, you could think of as text summaries.
Yeah.
So, like, are there things that this multimodal LLM can do that it can't do if you just, let's say, experiment? Like, you literally replace the image token with the text either embedding.
That was one application we wanted to run and didn't have time to do properly. Yeah.
Or just, like, at the beginning, give like a summary of the image, a caption of the image, and then ask it questions about the image. Are there, like,
I mean, I think giving it the caption is, like, that's definitely going to work. That's, like, almost cheating because someone has to generate this caption.
Well, but, like, shouldn't there be things that, you know, aren't capturable by a caption or something like this? That, like, are there things that this model, that this multimodal model can do that it can't do by just, like, bottlenecking image to caption and then from the caption answering a question?
I think in theory there should be things that are just much easier. Like, I mean, they look similar to language, but I think there is still some component in that vector that is a bit encoding something more continuous or, like, visual. But
that,
I think in practice, it's not...
What is that stuff?
I mean, it could just be, like, for example, the exact... I mean, I don't think that's actually happening in practice, but it could be the exact angle at which things are at. I don't think that's happening at this level. You need to train it, like, much more than just in a frozen way. And you can, in principle, of course, you could explain in language, like, exactly how the angles of things and the depth of things are. It's just a very inefficient way often.
So, yeah, I feel like it'd be interesting to try to find a task. Robert and I were actually talking about this. Like, to try to find a task where, like, the multimodal model can do it really well. But if you, like, introduce a text bottleneck, of, like, converting the image to a text, and then you just give the text to an LLM, it can't do the task.
No.
This would get at something that's sort of undescribable, or, like,
or at least very inefficiently described. Yeah,
right.
It's a question of the, like, impression, right? Because also in theory we go to multimodal RAG and those kind of fields. So the question is how you compress the image. So if you will write everything that ever can someone can ask about the question in a caption, so it will be able to answer it. But if you want them to represent it, I don't know, like in 1,000 embedded inside, so then you need to choose what information. And that's what he said. So then the question, if you know the question before, and then you can extract the specific information to the image or not. And I think this is, like,
in some sense, that's what the LLMs do. Like, when it looks at the question, it extracts the relevant.
Well, you could have, what if you had, like, an LLM give it two images? Right, then it feels like, oh, you might have a permanent difference. Like, you could say, is it the same person in these two images? And it seems like it might be really hard.
Yeah.
That's a good example. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Well, I think definitely if you have, like, an image captioner, I think you can always find, like, the adversarial question that you would be able to answer about the image if you can answer from the caption. Like, there are always something
that the caption missed. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think this is a good example. Like, we humans also are very good at telling faces, so we could probably tell if even with twins that one twin looks very, like, slightly different. Mm-hmm. Like, but putting that into words is very hard. And it gets a bit actually at this image code task here as well. Like, what is the smallest difference you can still put into words?
Stuff, right? It's like you said, if you have a lot of objects in the image, if you want any, like, any angle between two objects, try to describe it, may be very hard, right?
Or, like, you have, like, a lot of, like, emotions that are coming from lightings, or even without a pair of images.
Yeah.
Like, there is a lot of stuff that you, I think, feel when you see an image, but you cannot actually describe.
Yeah,
but can the MLP get it out?
Yeah, that's a good
question. I was gonna say, like, I think this just works because it's also the task of captioning that we are like training and evaluating it on. Like if it was other tasks, like even just simple spatial reasoning, it might be it's already breaking, especially in the frozen setup.
You can like have multiple events because the standard MLP would also like an early exit kind of skip connection to like capture both like a low level, like you know, the angle question by like compositionality and also the high level synthesis. Yeah, like, it is, it's like very apparently like late embedding.
Yeah, with this game.
Oh, so you're
oh, you mean like using early embeddings from the vision encoder?
Yeah, yeah, like from multiple different like depths to get like
different
levels of synthesis.
So we ran this, but never looked at it much.
We ran this?
That's a very
earlier VIT layers, yeah.
That's a very good question.
But we didn't study it much, so we just ran it. We ran it briefly here, earlier VIT layers. But we didn't, I think I ran it, and then I didn't see major differences in like the kind of nearest neighbors.
Maybe because they have the wrong kind of captions.
Right? Because so we're training on captions.
Because
yeah.
If the caption said, oh, we have all, you know, upper right diagonal lines, you know, high contrast colors,
right,
stuff like that, then you might be like, oh, we have a good layer one.
Yeah.
That would be,
or this
that would be really
light source, this and that, or this pixel, like this patch give me the emotion of I don't know that.
Yeah, where's
like,
the limit of this?
But are all features of images describable in language? Like, or does there exist some stuff that like actually no matter what caption you use,
I don't know. Eventually you read the whole research paper about the thing and how would you express the thing that's not expressible in language? Have you read the paper about that?
I feel like it's almost because right now we're trying to express something to you. It's like it's almost hard to like talk about it, right? Like I would say like for me honestly it might be but it might be but like I was gonna say like for me the easiest answer is something emotional, but like someone else might never be able to relate to some experience I had emotionally. Like I think visual stuff I can probably put into words on some level if I take a lot of words, but
how to ride bicycle?
Yeah, like if it's more like real world experience, like like that. Yeah.
Can I tell you about my hackathon project?
Yeah.
My hackathon project is going to be instead of using a vision model, I'm going to take a chess model.
A chess model.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to train a like hybrid thing I want the chess model to explain what it's
thinking. So I'm connecting the chess model to the LLM, like almost in a similar way to here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But here it's like, I think it's sort of interesting because if you look at a given patch of the patch, instead of image patches, it's like a board.
So actually meaningful patches, no?
Yeah, but it's like a board, like A1.
Yeah.
It has a roof on it or something, right? And mm-hmm. So like if you just write the description of the board, like, okay, you know what pieces are on the board.
Yeah.
But like you like an LLM might not know what like higher level concepts are there or something. Like the higher level concepts are not all captionable or something. Like you could caption them, but like white is attacking, is threatening the queen, or like there's a queen side attack, or like even white is winning.
Wait, can you convince me that like a specific setting on your board is not fully describable in text?
No, but there are like so many concepts in chess, or like possible things that
it's
you could point out.
Sequence of upcoming moves.
Right, but why do you just need to understand the logic and not necessarily like the right language for it? Like,
but
it's still very interpretable.
I think it's I think of it more like, is it efficiently described in language? Like, I think you can describe it, but is it the most efficient way? Like, probably not.
Yeah, I guess what I'm getting at is like with an image, like you can take each patch and describe each patch. And then from looking at all of those, you can have a description of the thing. With chess, like if you take a square and you know that there's a rook there, and then you take the like it doesn't really tell you what's going on at the proper level of.
I can argue the same for images.
It's right because is that a column, right? You can't tell unless you actually see it's a building, right? Otherwise, if you really just look at the patch.
Yeah.
It could be a piece of a refrigerator, right? You know,
But I also I think there's more of a fact that it's just your chess model has been fine-tuned on this to learn these concepts, whereas your LLM might not have been fine-tuned. Like if you fine-tune your LLM to learn these concepts with like thousands of chess games, like maybe it would also learn them.
Just from looking at the board.
Yeah, like the textual description of the board.
It's a good project. Don't dissuade him. It's a good project.
No, yeah.
I'm willing to take bets. I think it's gonna work.
That you like the mapping it into the LLM.
Right. And then and then you have to train a latent lens for it.
Yeah. This would be interesting if it maps to like sentences about chess. So.
Yeah, I'll send you a blog post tomorrow.
So 1 day project.
2 day.
2 day project.
So wait, the questions you are asking are really different from what the VLM is asking. It's like asking if this image, if it's going to rain tomorrow, or if the builder that built the cloth that.
Yeah, it's not the naturalistic setting of using VLM. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, the visual encoder is trained to say that's a clock.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a building, there's a shadow.
So this is, you're characterizing the MLP, right? I mean, that's how, that's what the vision, that's what this MLP is trained on. Now, you could have trained the vision encoder on something else, right? Yes.
Are you talking about chess still? Or?
No, it's a set, but I'm saying the vision encoder.
Yes, yes.
That's used to
build
that.
Oh, the underlying vision encoder. Yeah. So there's two parts. There's like three things that have learned something.
Maybe sure, the task, it's just captioning the image.
Okay,
and this chess model is used to playing chess. Knowing if it's winning or losing.
That's right.
It's a sequential model.
That's right.
And he wants to ask the question, given a board state, does it know what side of attack is happening, who's going to win?
Right. Right.
So I think these are like slightly different questions. I don't know how you caption them. I don't know where the captions come from.
I don't think it would be captioning would be objective to train the LLM here. It would just be like, again, predicting.
No, I am, but. I can talk about it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fair enough.
That'll be next week's talk.
I have the idea.
All right. One more question before
closing vision question.
Yeah.
So I like the push for having unified architectures, more unified, unified architectures.
Yep.
But also you have this vision to make them interpretable. Like, don't you think they are like kind of orthogonal? Like, maybe if you become more unified, they'll become less interpretable.
That's a good question, yeah.
There was that paper you talked about, like pre-training, where it like decreased the ability, right?
Yeah, so like the Chameleon and Emu are two models that are fully natively multimodal, and they're.
But they're also not that good.
But they don't perform very well.
Yeah. So. They don't perform well?
Like, if you got your really, truly unified model,
I think it boils down to like whether we think of language as the modality of like an interpretable explanation or not. Like, you think, like, there might be less interpretable in the sense that we humans want mostly textual explanations. So in that sense, maybe there will be less, yeah. But
so do you
but,
think like there's a side of research that's ready to be born, like a vision interpretation or something, where you're just interpreting with images, not text?
Yeah, I mean, this exists as far as I know, but like, or like not exists, but I mean, this is a field. Like, yes, I feel like this would be nice, and maybe there will be tokens where like you can only interpret them by that, like, or
like processing through images.
Yes. Finding nearest images, like for that, or like.
I think anthropic scaling monosemanticity had this. Like, for a given essay featuring a language model, in a multimodal language model, they not only searched over maximum text activations, but also max activating image.
Yeah.
So, like for Golden Gate feature, like you see pictures of the Golden Gate Bridge.
Yeah. Nice. That's cool, yeah. So yeah, you can do the opposite here as well, like latent lens on finding nearest neighbor image to neighbors to text tokens.
Or chess games.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm glad we had so much time, because usually like I try to like nail it like in practice, like to exactly 50 minutes.
No, it's very, very well. We're very good at messing up a very well-tuned talk. So it's